is a deep recording, man.
Yeah,
I can dig it.
Stop right on.
Hey, man, what's your name?
Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, the industry's first and longest-running podcast, now in its 16th year. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of GGB, and this week we sit down with Roy Student, the president of Applied Management Strategies, on his long career involving the emerging technology, cutting-edge issues, and the way he views the old school. 20 years ago, IGT transformed the industry by introducing cashless gaming with Tito. Now IGT is revolutionizing cashless yet again. Learn more about IGT's resort wallet at igt.com/cashless. Roy Student arrived in Las Vegas in the early 70s and immediately got involved in technology that moved the casino industry forward. He was an early participant in CMS systems, server-based technology, and was an advocate for non-gaming amenities at a time when only gaming revenue was valued. But Student's long career included interacting with some of the greats of gaming, and his recollections remind people that if you don't understand the past, you can't prepare for the future. He spoke with me from his home office in April. Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast. We are here with Roy Student, the legendary Roy Student, and we're going to talk about his history. Roy, you've done some really interesting things in your life. You've contributed to a lot of innovations in the industry, and it's great to have you here.
It is great to be here, Roger. You know, we've known you and we've known the magazine a long time, and I'm looking forward to this discussion.
Great. Well, let's start from the beginning. How did you get into the industry, and what were some of your first jobs in the industry?
Well, my first jobs in the industry is when I was actually working for a company called General Instrument New York, and they had a division called American Totalizator, which ran racetracks and off-track betting
right. And
things of that nature. And all of a sudden, we got a call in early 1972 from MGM, from the chairman, that they were going to build a casino in Las Vegas. And they were looking for a company that was familiar with gaming, even though it wasn't the casino part, but it was racetracks and lotteries, what have you. I flew out Culver City, met with Al Benedict and Fred Benninger and Kirk Kerkorian. And 90 days later, we got the contract to build the casino systems. So my entree into it was starting in 1972, and we opened MGM with the first type of casino system on December 5th, 1973.
Okay.
So that was my entry into this beautiful, wonderful world we're in.
So what kind of a system was it? I mean, was it just an accounting system in those days?
It was an accounting, it was a floor system accounting. At that time, it was not player tracking. We still used index cards for the player tracking.
Okay. Right.
Okay. But we did everything that went on the tables, the markers, the cage, everything that happened on the floor in gaming. And we were recognizing the players through it as we had the index cards that were added into the system. Okay. So we knew what they were doing. And also we could hand it over to the junket operators to know the performance of the various players that were coming in, that we were bringing in. So you could say it was the first automated casino system, but it was not automated on player tracking, and it was not on a slot system yet.
Okay. Yeah, so it was just the tables then.
It was basically the tables, though you could have gotten signed a marker if you wanted to for the slots.
Right, okay. Yeah.
And go to the cage and settle up.
I recall when I started dealing in 1979 in Atlantic City that we had an automated marker system. Whenever somebody came to the table, said they want a marker, it would be something printed out on a dot matrix printer in those days. You know,
that's correct.
Right.
We used Data General hardware.
Yeah.
Way back when.
Sure. Exactly. So then you joined a company called Gaming Systems International, GSI, and how did that come about?
Well, really, GSI was really a company called VSLP. I was doing some work for Ben LeBeau, who owned Liggett & Myers and Western Union at the time. And he owned another company called MAI, which owned a company called CLS, Computerized Lodging Systems, mm-hmm. which was built very large in the hotel front desk systems area.
Right.
And Ben wanted to get into the casino business. Mm-hmm. So we said, can you look around and see what's available we could buy?
Okay.
I found a company called DSLP. It was a small software company that we bought back in 1993, mm-hmm. okay, I think. And we changed the name and it became GSI Gaming Systems International.
Right. And that how did that do? How did that company do in the long run here?
Did very well. We, you know, at that time, we were competing with the worlds of Bally and IGT and Casino Data Systems.
Right.
Okay. And after a while, actually Acres.
Right.
We kind of set us, realized we were not a big guy, so we went to places where they would not want to go sometimes. Mm-hmm. So we went and did a lot of our work in systems down in the Caribbean, South America, into Europe, Asia, Philippines. We opened up casinos. And throughout Europe, we opened up casinos.
Okay.
And then during that time period, we partnered with a company, a small company called Novomatic.
Okay, right. Small company.
And Novomatic, we were their arm in the European market, and they took over our systems business to do it within the European market under the GSI Europe brand, which was actually Novomatic.
Okay. All right, great. So did you concentrate on player tracking in that system there?
Yes, it was all the accounting, it was player tracking, it was tables, it was slots. And we did that to 2001. And at that time, we sold the company to a company called MIS out of Monaco. Mm-hmm. And they took it over, and they took the system over, actually. I spent some time out there. And that was, you know, the finishing of the system in regard to GSI, though I spent another year with GSI as we made the conversion.
Okay.
Then in 2002, I met a fella through the French company, MIS, Jean-Marie Gatto.
Right.
Who had a company called ComputerScan, okay, or CyberScan, and he did all the Ladbrook stuff on the fixed odds betting terminals mm-hmm. in London.
Okay.
And it was like a server-based thing, but not really.
Right.
And we talked, and he said, do you want to have and use my software? We'll start a company in the U.S. called CyberView.
Right.
And we started a company called CyberView Technology. And all of a sudden, we said we converted it to a server-based system, mm-hmm. started in 2002, created the whole server-based concept, went through GLI, got the GLI approval, okay?
Right.
And we were in a server-based system, and for the first time, nobody else was there.
Right.
The company CyberView then was sold to IGT in 2007.
Okay. So that was a server-based system, but, you know, that was supposed to be a revolutionary development in the industry, and really was, but it's not recognized as such right now. Almost every system these days is server-based. Why was that kind of glossed over and how important that was?
Well, to be honest with you, mm-hmm. okay, what IGT basically did, we had about 26 patents.
Right.
Okay. And basically IGT bought the patents.
I see.
And some of the people. Mm-hmm. But in my belief, not really understanding what the benefits of server-based system would do for a property.
Right.
As I remember, their first installation was Aria.
Right.
for IGT with Serverbase.
Right. So that's a long time after they bought CyberView.
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay. And the whole concept of server-based system is to have the ability to not have as many slot machines on the floor, but still have all the capabilities of all the games that the good players would want to play.
Right.
Okay. And how you organized it. We believe it was not done in an appropriate or proper way and sold to the casinos in that fashion.
Right.
We originally developed.
Yeah, right. And the idea was you'd have a box, basically, and you could put any game you want on that box, right?
Correct, and also change the times of it.
Right.
I mean, you know, for example, in the afternoon, you might have Keno-type players or what have you.
Right.
And those machines would be Keno slot machines.
Mm-hmm.
And then about 6 o'clock in the evening, you got the other serious players coming in.
Right.
Okay, and then you just automatically switch it over to that type of, you know, system and denominations.
Right. Yep.
So.
Yeah, and I guess that's kind of happening today with the all the new cabinets coming out. There's always a different variety of games on those cabinets, but they're not really able to change the game itself, you know, to an entirely different game. Still.
No.
Yeah.
It's the management of the casino floor, you know, I believe.
And right.
And how they manage the casino floor.
Right.
You know, and you got to realize that CyberView, we grew up building a system and understanding it how we thought the casinos would really benefit from an ROI standpoint. You know, when it was sold over to IGT, obviously they bought basically the patents.
Right.
You know, from the company. And the knowledge level or the learning curve, I don't think was there initially.
Sure.
Because the basic group of people that developed it were gone.
Right, right. Okay, great. So I think the next example of your foresight in the industry was your endorsement of non-gaming amenities. I mean, that was just a small trend a decade ago, but you were at the front pushing that to the gaming executives, and you know how resistant they are to change, you know, for the most part, but now you see it's in every property.
Oh my God, yes. And that's probably well over 10 years ago, if my memory is still there.
Right. Okay. Yeah, sure.
Well over 10 years ago, I saw people coming in, some of them actually friends of mine, that were very good players. Let's call them patrons.
Right.
Okay. They would come in for a weekend with their entourage.
Yeah.
And over the weekend, spend $20,000 or $30,000. Never going to the table.
Right.
Casino did very well, was not at risk. And then there are times I would go over to a casino executive at 10 years ago and say, you know, you've got people coming in that are spending thousands of dollars.
Right.
And you don't know who they are.
Right.
Okay. You're not catering to them. And you know, you take no risk.
Sure.
With them.
Right.
And some of them, you would say that too, and you say, listen, they're coming in. Maybe you ought to give them upgrade to a suite or whatever. So, their interest level at that time was not that great in regard to giving them amenities.
Right, yep. And okay. And you were an advocate of developing new amenities as well, you know, going far beyond, you know, rooms and food and beverage and spa and things like that.
Yep, there was a whole bunch of things that... The demographics of the industry changed. The players you had, you know, 25 years ago, 20 years ago, were the baby boomers who were very good players.
Right.
That were brought in by the junkets and what have you.
Right.
Okay. Those faded away. Well, let's say we got a little older.
Right.
Okay. With the demographic changes, like anything else, their interest level changes.
Sure.
Like today with the millennials and the Gen X is coming in.
Right.
Okay. So what I noticed that people were coming in to do more than gamble. They mm-hmm. were coming in to go to a gourmet restaurant.
Right.
Do some real shopping. okay?
Yep.
And see some of the fabulous shows that Las Vegas has to offer.
Right.
Okay. And just so happens, they'll play a little blackjack.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
They'll right.
play craps. Baccarat 25 to 30 years ago was the thing. That was the thing to do.
Right.
And you brought those, we call them whales.
Right.
Today, they're far and few.
Right.
But you do have a lot of good craps players and 21 players that exist that still come in and looking for the amenities, but your demographics changed. The pool, going
right,
to the
sure.
pool and getting cabana.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right.
The entertainment style has changed.
Well, the nightclubs, okay. you know, I mean, these young kids who may not be gamblers yet, but they're coming in to go to the nightclubs and spend, you know, $300-$400 on a bottle of liquor, you know.
Without, and that's a low price you're quoting.
Right. Right.
That's a low price. And the people are coming in for a vacation. You know, many years ago, an average stay in Vegas was 1.5 nights.
Right.
Okay. People come into Vegas now and spend 2 to 3 nights at a minimum
mm-hmm.
in Vegas.
Right.
They want to be entertained.
Right.
Okay. And it's more than just gaming. And it took the casinos a while. And then as you saw, M Life came out. The Harrah's system came out.
Right.
Okay. So now all of a sudden the world realizes there's a loyalty system.
Mm-hmm.
And the loyalty system should also be based upon the non-gaming spend.
Right. Yeah.
And now, all of a sudden, over the last, it's probably 3 or 4 years now,
mm-hmm.
70% of the revenue from the casinos are cutting from non-gaming.
Right. Well, on the Las Vegas Strip, that is.
On the Las Vegas Strip.
Right, right.
You know, which is a big deal. Today, with the pandemic, it's a different world.
Resort Wallet from IGT provides a digital wallet for all your players' gaming and retail needs. From card or cardless-based cashless transactions, your players will love the convenience of getting rid of cash and all the hassles associated with using cash. And with IGT Pay, IGT's exclusive payment gateway, your players can fund their cashless wagering accounts from multiple external sources simultaneously. The benefits of cashless gaming are amazing. No more waiting in lines at ATMs to get cash, no more waiting in lines to redeem your tickets, and no more waiting for service when your ticket printer jams. Learn more about IGT's Resort Wallet at igt.com/cashless. And now back to our podcast.
We've got most of the revenue now coming off the gaming floor once again. Are casinos reluctant to go back to the non-gaming model that they used so successfully before the pandemic?
No, they're not reluctant at all.
Yeah.
It's a timing issue.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. They are planning to go back to the non-gaming amenities. Okay. Actually, during this time of pandemic, some of the properties have opened new restaurants, actually.
Right, yeah, sure, yep.
Within the facilities. We now have to be a little smarter, okay?
Right.
In the way we are doing business, because we know we have a patron out there. We know the type of patron he is, or she is. That patron is also a little younger than we used to have.
Right.
Okay, and are looking for other forms of entertainment. So from the pandemic, we are slowly easing back into the non-gaming world, but we're looking at amenities that fit into it for the time being, as we have a limitation of, you know, how many people we can put in a space or walk through a space
right,
or what have
right,
you.
Right.
But you will see over the course of the next year, the amenities definitely coming back. Okay.
Right.
Because a lot of these amenities have to do with the MICE type of world.
Sure.
Which is
right.
meetings and conventions.
Right, right. Well, I think property that really demonstrates this is the one that just opened last week in Las Vegas, the Virgin Hotel with the Mohegan Casino. I mean, they have so many different amenities in terms of food and beverage and entertainment that, you know, they're looking to get that 70-30 split, you know, so they have an actual separate company running the casino, and the Virgin is running the hotels.
And listen, you've got a great combination. The Virgin Hotel chain is fantastic, and you can't get one of the best operators out there, Mohegan Sun, without question.
Right, right. And the mix of amenities they have, we haven't seen the pool area yet, but they've got an event lawn now rather than the rehab club outside, you know, which was a headache toward the end for the Hard Rock people. Are these the kind of amenities you see coming back pretty quickly?
Yes, yeah. They are. The if you remember the thing, the joint
right.
at Hard Rock, they're redoing it right now.
Right.
Okay, it's not open yet, and they're redoing it. And they realize that who are we going to cater to? Who is our audience level going to be?
Right.
Because the audience level has changed dramatically.
Right.
Okay. But all the casinos realize amenities and the non-gaming activities is still going to draw into, especially the Las Vegas world.
Okay? Right.
We're in the entertainment business. We're in the attraction. Put it this way. We're in the attraction business.
Right, right. So, you know, with the rise of iGaming and we see the revenue spiking in New Jersey and all the other places that offer iGaming, I guess the in-person experience at a casino is really going to have to be elevated for them to attract people, because gambling, you can do that on your living room sofa now.
That's correct. But let me tell you something. Let's look back about 20 years, maybe 25,
yeah.
when the beginning of riverboats.
Right.
If we remember, people thought, the casino industry especially, that riverboats are really going to hurt the casino industry.
Right.
What happened was a lot of new players got adapted to gaming on the riverboats mm-hmm. in the various locales around the country.
Right.
You developed another generation of players. Once they started playing, they wanted to go to the mothership.
Right.
Mothership was Las Vegas.
Right.
Okay. They had to have that experience. Mm-hmm. Okay. So what has happened here, iGaming is going to grow and grow and grow without a question. But the people that are sitting in their living room playing the iGaming on their mobile device, at some point in time saying, my God, I got to go to the mothership.
Right.
I got to go to a casino and have a real feel, because it's one thing doing it on your iPhone, okay?
Right.
It's another thing on a face-to-face environment in an exciting atmosphere as a casino.
Right. And I think there really hasn't been that marketing of the casinos on the online casinos, the land-based casinos. And I think once they start to realize how they can do that, how they convert an iGaming player into a real life bricks and mortar customer, I think that's when it's really going to explode there.
Well, they started to, Roger.
Yeah.
If you look at some of the larger land-based, let's call them land-based casinos, mm-hmm. okay. If you look at them, a lot of the land-based casinos are all going into the iGaming sector.
Right.
Either developing it themselves, partnering with somebody, or buying somebody in iGaming.
Right. Yeah.
So that transition is already in motion.
Sure. No question. I'm interviewing Andrew Pascal tomorrow of Play Studios, which had that great My Vegas app, which started, you know, in the mid noughts in 2006
yeah.
or so, and that's been very successful by enticing players to play their social game and then to come to the casino.
Absolutely correct. iGaming is going to expand. It's going to expand, but your people, they're going to be a large portion of the folks still going to want to go to gaming. And you're probably going to develop some percentage of new players that weren't there before.
Right, okay.
That are going to get
sure.
familiar with it. And again, they're going to want to come to the mothership.
Right, okay, great. So, you know, a lot of people are talking about you know, the way they used to run casinos, how it was much more of a personal relationship between the players and the casino, with the casino hosts or the pit bosses or whatever. What were things like in the old days when you started, when there was that kind of personal relationship, and how can we bring that back, or can you even do that now?
Well, we're going to have to bring that back, okay? Mm-hmm. Totally different today. I have heard from many players that they will choose a casino now because of the host.
Right.
Okay?
Sure.
And not to go into any particular ones to discuss that, but some of the casinos are doing an exceptional job understanding the host facility,
right,
and what to do with a player. Others are not doing as well as a job, and not, let's say, cuddling the good player when he's coming in. Or, I mean, the old days when the good players were in, the host would go into the coffee shop, talk about his family, talk
right,
what's going on. He was there. He was part of your environment.
Right.
He was part of the guy you felt comfortable with.
Right. So
today, there's very few. It exists. It
right,
goes on in some of the properties.
Sure.
But it's scarce.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to point fingers at any company, but there was one big casino company whose CEO was a former Harvard professor, and he valued, you know, those PhDs after a name for a casino president or something, and that really took away that personal touch, I think,
and it really hasn't
returned. I mean, how can a casino like recapture that, those personal touches, and even using the technology we have today? So you would think it would be easier to do that because you know so much more about your players.
There's no question. You have really have a good feel with the technology, what they are, who they are, you know, a lot about them. And you could go ahead, and when they do come in or invite them in, you could give them that personal touch with some of the hosts that are executive hosts that I do know now still do that.
Right.
And are doing very, very well.
Yeah.
Others are not, because I don't think they understand what being a host is in a casino.
Right. Yeah.
Today.
Yeah.
You know, the world of a host has changed dramatically, a lot because of the technology, and we understand that, and the growth of the demographics and the population that's coming in. But still, your hardcore player who you really care about, you want to make him feel very comfortable there, that he's part of your family when he's in.
Right, yep.
And you're right. I mean, we know who you're talking about. Okay. And it's a shame. Yet other facilities have done a very good job in doing that.
Sure.
Okay. And have been successful.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's kind of an old school thing. And sometimes, you know, these new casino executives look down their nose at old school personal touches. And I think that really has to stop. And you have to really value that in a casino host or any kind of executive.
I mean, it is very valuable. It is something that has to be taught on the way down from player development.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
The player development people have to, or the head of player has to instill that within the hosts to understand the value of the player.
Right. Yeah. No question about that. So, you know, we just went through a bunch of your accomplishments and your innovative thoughts for the industry. How do you see the casino experience changing over the next 5 or so years?
Well, I think we got to get a better handle on the new generation that's coming in, and how do we cater to them?
Right.
The millennials, which is a big talk.
Right.
Okay. I think technology and amenities and new types of amenities that are going to come about, and attractions. And I use the word attractions because there's a lot of new attractions that are being developed in Vegas and outside of Vegas that will probably come in that will make us more of an entertainment world. So I think technology over the next 5 years is going to play a very large part of how Vegas is going to be structured. You know, The craps table is not going to change.
Right.
The slot machine is not going to change.
Right.
The odds are not going to change. Okay. So what is going to change is your demographics and who your patron is.
Right.
Okay. And over the next 5 years, we're going to have to look at how, what of our patron base is going to be and how, what are we going to offer them?
Right. Well, we've seen
different environment than it was, you know, like I said, 25, 30 years ago.
Right. Well, we've already seen the demographics change because of the pandemic. I mean, young people, felt like, as most young people do, they're indestructible and they can go out and enjoy themselves. They can go out there and they didn't have theaters or anything to go to. So they've come to the casinos. And I understand that just now the older folks are starting to come back now that the vaccine is out there. And but I don't think we're going to lose those young people who came to the casinos.
No, they're still going to be here, but A, what do we really have to offer them?
Right.
You know, first thing. Sure. But two, what worth are they to the property?
Right.
In regard to an expenditure?
Right.
Okay. That's why there's been so much talk about, you know, skilled gaming.
Right.
Esports.
Right.
Are they going to be, you know, the next, you know, messiah in gaming? In my opinion, I think it's going to be a long evolution.
Right. Sure.
Before you really see esports and skill gaming becoming a large revenue producer, okay, and profit center
right.
for the property.
Yeah, absolutely. So what's next for Roy Student? What are some of the projects you're involved with now? I know you've done a lot of consulting for a lot of companies in the industry, people that respect your experience and your viewpoint. So what's next with you?
Well, as you probably know, I have our consulting company, Applied Management Strategies.
Right.
And right now, our main client is Clarion Gaming,
mm-hmm.
which we are structuring and advising them on types of webinars to do out there and programs to do
right.
To attract the audience during this pandemic and now getting ready for probably our next big trade show, which would be ICE in London in February.
Right.
But in between that, we have a thing called ICE 365, which we are going to be catering to, obviously, not just the iGaming world, but extremely to the land-based world in regard to providing where the industry is going, what's new in the industry, how are various companies doing things with it. We want to become more of a point where the Clarion organization could be a form or source of knowledge
right.
of gathering some of the brightest people in the industry and put them on panels, set up, webinars right as we can to during this time period, let everybody experience what's going on. Because right now in the world we're in, we want to share each other's experience.
Sure.
The pandemic was new to us.
Right.
And one of the things we need to do, we're doing that. We've done that with certain companies like Mohegan Sun and a few others we have on the agenda right now.
Mm-hmm.
We did a few things called Back to the Basics. As I kid with people, over the last couple of months, we were really in the saloon business.
Yeah.
We didn't have amenities.
Mm-hmm.
We were a regular casino.
Right.
What did we offer you?
Mm-hmm.
We'd offer you a table. We'll offer you a slot machine. We offer you a coffee shop. And in some cases, we offered you a room.
Right.
Okay. And the people that came in were players.
Yeah.
They were diehard players. During the pandemic, they would come in. So we were operating as a saloon.
Mm-hmm.
We're now migrating back to, where we are or where we were. But it's going to take time. And a lot has going to have to do with our air travel availability.
Right. Right.
And that is still trying to get back onto where we were, pre-pandemic.
Right. Yeah.
So the air travel industry is going to, play a big part of how we operate within a casino environment.
Right. Right. Okay, great.
That's how we see the future.
Okay, great. Well, Roy, thanks for joining us. It's been very informative. I'm sure a lot of our viewers here are going to think twice about some of the things they take for granted now with the non-gaming amenities and the server-based gaming and that kind of thing. And you were a part of all that stuff. So congratulations on doing that, and thanks for taking the time to speak with us.
Well, thank you, Roger. Anytime, enjoyed it. I love the industry. It's the world that, you know, I've lived in, love it, and always will be.
Okay, great.
Thank you, Roger.
Hope you enjoyed this week's podcast brought to you by IGT. Your players will experience the convenience of digital transactions throughout your resort property with IGT's Resort Wallet. Learn more at igt.com/cashless. To learn more about technology in the gaming industry and how it is constantly developing, visit ggvmagazine.com. To get all the news of the gaming industry, particularly of the coronavirus situation and its impact on gaming, including daily updates, subscribe for free at ggbnews.com by using the code GGB180. Don't miss a single episode of the GGB podcast. Subscribe on iTunes and Spotify today. So we'll see you next time on the GGB podcast. Right on. Yeah.